Welcome to the Life in the Stocks podcast, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Matt Stocks. I'm the host, and the show features unedited, in-depth, candid conversations with a wide range of musicians, actors, comedians, and creatives. If you're not already, be sure to subscribe to Life in the Stocks on your favorite podcast platform. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and indeed all major podcast platforms. Be sure to give me a follow on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok as well, at Matt Stocks DJ. That way you can keep up to date with all of my live Q&A dates, my DJ performances, and of course, who's coming up on the show as well. But without further ado, let's crack on with the show, shall we? Here we go.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Texture like sun, blaze me down with my mind. She runs throughout the night, no need to fight, never a frown with golden brown.
Let's talk first of all very quickly about the New Year's Eve that you just had, because the pictures from it looked absolutely beautiful. And I had Andy and Tomo on this podcast just before the end of the year, and they were sort of both, well, gearing up to launch their own podcast, which you were also on.
Yes.
But Tomo was particularly, I guess, weighed down with wedding plans. And, you know, I think for a cast such as This Is England, I was speaking to John Bradley, who plays Samwell Tarly in Game of Thrones, about this as well. And there's certain projects which are so unique because of that, I guess, experience of growing old together, growing up together.
Yeah.
And you must have watched those guys go from boys to men. And so I guess to be there on a day like that when you see, you know, little Tomo getting wed, it must have been quite a a trip, right?
Yeah, you bang on the money there. It was slightly overwhelming at times, you know what I mean? Basically for them reasons what you just said. I think Tomo was 14 when we shot the film for This Is England. And to watch him, like you said, grow into that really, what was it? When was it? In the 80s? Was it the 80s or 90s? That band, Boys to Men.
Yeah.
To watch him grow, do you know what I mean? To watch them all grow, like you said, and to still maintain that relationship. You know, you like to keep in touch with as many people as you can that you meet in this business. It's a kind of a nomadic existence, do you know what I mean? And you build these strong, intense relationships when you're working with people. And there's a few of them that you really keep in touch with and become friends for life, do you know what I mean? And as a collective, as a little group, I think that was the case for the majority of us on This Is England, especially Tomo, and, you know, personally for me, Tomo and Vicky, especially, and Shane. But because they were the people who I kind of worked with mostly and who I was really close with. But Tomo, to go back to him and watch him develop as that little kid who was very difficult to keep him still, do you know what I mean? You had to bribe him with cans of Coke and Mars bars.
Really?
Yeah. to just finish these next couple of scenes and then, you know, then you can have a Mars bar, or you can have a can of Coke, or you can have a little break in that. I'm not saying Shane was in any way, shape, or form treating him like child labour. It wasn't slave labour for kids. But it was them little incentives. And to watch this kid who was so magnificent as an actor because he wasn't aware of any of the techniques of acting, or he was just being brutally, truthfully honest. Do you know what I mean? And a majority of that character back then was him. Was the essence of him. Do you know what I mean? He was just being extremely natural. So sometimes it was like, I've described it before. It was kind of like, you know, a little bit weird in a way, but it was like working with De Niro or something like that, because
where does the character end and the human start?
And he was proper, do you know what I mean? If you did something a second time, or maybe you know, because you always like to keep it fresh and change it, but maybe, I don't know, if you weren't quite something, if there was something just missing, when you'd finish, you'd go, I didn't believe that.
Really?
And you go,
amazing.
And you go, what? What do you mean? And you go, no, the other one was better. You frightened me in the last one. It's like, okay, little shit. Okay, yeah. Then. All right, well, I'll show you in this next one then. Do you know what I mean? So there was that kind of element to it.
Did he always have that, I guess, self-confidence in himself?
Throughout the whole rehearsal process and even the audition, I don't know, he's probably told you about the, you know, turning up for the second audition and wanting a tenner and all that and everything and stuff. And we bribed him with computer games and PlayStations and things like that. But
did you see any sort of kinship in yourself, in him? Is there any similarities in terms of I think I heard you on the Pitt podcast, which was incredible, and you were sort of talking about how in that you have to have a little bit of that cheekiness in this game.
Yeah.
To, you know, not be afraid to kind of be, go on.
Like you say, you know what I mean?
All you can get is no, right, as a response.
Completely, and not be afraid to, you know, really put yourself out there, and especially at that young age, you know what I mean? There was elements of him that I did see in myself that kind of just go for it.
Yeah.
Not be afraid, you know what I mean? Really put everything into it. And then especially, we managed to show his mum a couple of scenes from the film. One time in Shane's trailer, actually. His mum was about on set a couple of times and we managed to show her a few scenes. Unfortunately, she passed. So she didn't get to see the entire film, do you know what I mean? But just to see that pride and that joy that she had for her little lad, do you know what I mean? I think I'm not speaking out of turn, but there was kind of, you know, from his school, and there was a few people that really stood by Tomo and helped him through the youth centre he went to and things like that, do you know what I mean? Like care workers and stuff like that. But a lot of people have kind of had kind of put him down as a no-hope, do you know what I mean? Feel it, that kind of, he'll never achieve anything, he'll amount to nothing, and he'll just be a lad who's, you know, who has no aspirations and will not aspire to be anything. And that's just the truth of it, do you know what I mean? That was the facts of it. And I suppose his mum had been told things like that. She actually said that to me, actually. She'd been told him kind of things by teachers and people, you know, in that area and in that community.
And it's like that age-old thing, if you hear it enough times, you start to believe it yourself, right?
Of course, yeah. And then to watch this little screen, because I didn't even look at the screen, I just looked at her face all the time. And to see, like I said, to see that pride and that joy, you know what I mean, was unbelievable. And then unfortunately, you know, she passed, and we all went to the funeral. And we were there to support Tomo, even, you know, at that young age and stuff. And then to watch him when he got married, I'm getting a bit emotional now, I don't know. It was just proper, do you know what I mean? It really, yeah. I don't mean to be soppy or nothing, but it really did. It had a major impact on me just because, to remember his mum and them quality times that me and Hannah spent with his mum and stuff on set and things and offset. And we had a big party and his mum said, she said, look, promise me that you'll stick around for him and you'll be there for him.
He said to me in the podcast that he did with me that you made her that promise that you're going to make sure that you didn't just go back to Grimsby.
Yeah.
And
yeah, and I did. Do you know what I mean? And I did. And to be there on his wedding day and watch that promise be fulfilled was was a massive moment in my life. It was kind of, it was akin to my kids being born. Do you know what I mean? So it was an extremely special and beautiful moment in my life that I'll never forget. And he looked great. You know what I mean? And she's amazing. She's a lovely girl. And it was just a really special evening.
When you were starting out, did you have anybody put their arm around you and encourage you and sort of take you under their wing, as it were, in a similar sort of a way? Did you have that figure in your life?
Not in the respect of another actor in that sense, but as a man was my dad, you know what I mean? My pops and my mum, both of them were extremely supportive for me. You know, in the early days, they'd take me to every man, and they'd, when I got into National Youth Music Theatre and stuff, they'd take me down to London and kind of like, you know, you'd hear certain footballers say about what their parents did for them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Taking them to games and all that kind of thing. It was very similar for me. And the support, and my mum came down to London quite a few times with me back in the early days, you know what I mean? And all the other kids that were there and traveling on the train and stuff like that, and just chatting with my ma and seeing the excitement in her and the joy that she got from it, you know what I mean? And so I had that support network in a respect of, because I think it was from about 12 or something, I just thought.
That's when you got the bug, was it?
Yeah. A little bit before, but when I was about 12 or something like that, what happened was I did a play in school and an amazing actor, going back to that kind of same, similar kind of thing, an amazing actor called Drew Schofield, who was...
No relation to Philip?
No relation to Philip at all. But he used to live across the road from my nana's house. And he was in a thing called Scully back in the day. And he was also in Sid and Nancy. He played Johnny Rotten.
Oh, okay, right.
And he was a fantastic actor, do you know what I mean? I'd seen him on stage at the Everyman and things like that. And he came to watch a school play that we did. His nephew was in a school play and he came to watch it, and at the end of it he came over to me, ma and dad, and he said, "Your Stephen's got a bit of talent." And my mum went, "Oh, thanks." And he was like, "No, I'm serious, you know what I mean? He's really good."
Yeah, he wasn't obviously just in a conversation and he was being polite. He'd gone
Yeah, and he knew me, ma and dad, you know what I mean? It's a small little community, Kirby, especially back in the day. So everybody kind of knew everyone, do you know what I mean? And we all knew he was an actor, and it was really weird because it felt as if it was attainable because he lived across the road, do you know what I mean? He was in the vicinity of where I was from. Plus, he spoke in Scully specifically in a Scouse accent. So, and I know back in the day, you know, Brookside was on and things like that, and Boys from the Black stuff and all them great, great, great pieces. But he spoke in the same accent as me. He sounded very similar to me. And he lived across the road from me nanny, where I spent a load of times, you know what I mean? And we used to knock on his door and get autographs and that. And he just said to my mum and dad that he thought I was really talented and, you know, I should definitely pursue it, which we did. And then I think I went to the Everyman Youth Theatre when I was about 13. And it kind of started from there.
Was there any actors that you sort of would see on either stage or screen that would inspire you and have a sort of a direct influence on perhaps your approach to the craft, or did you have any heroes early on?
Yeah, early, like when I was in my late teens, it was Gary Oldman.
Really?
Yeah, all day long, Gary Oldman.
So to fast track just super quick, when you're then there on the set of Tinker Tailor and doing scenes with him,
mad, yeah.
Is that still in the back of your head? Like, this is the guy that
switched
me on?
It really was. And I was dead nervous about meeting him and all that on the day, do you know what I mean, on the morning. And I was just there outside me trailer waiting to go into makeup. And then he came over and he just said, "Hello, I'm Gary." And I was like, "Hello, I'm Stephen." And then he said a lovely thing about This Is England and about my performance in This Is England, which just immediately, because you still have the moments where you go, what do you mean? You've seen what I do. Do you know what I mean? In your head sometimes, you just don't think that, although it's weird. It is weird when someone like that, who you really respect and admire, do you know what I mean, massively, says that they've seen your work and they really enjoyed your performance and stuff like that. It's a bit weird. it's a bit like, oh, you know, do you know what I mean? You don't expect them to watch things.
Yeah, it's that double tier wins, isn't it? It's one, what Gary Oldman still watches films.
Yeah.
And then the other one is what he's seen mine.
He's
and then the
seen
third
me
level
do
is,
something.
And he rates it. And...
Yeah, and he thought it was good. And he said I was very good. And it's all a little bit weird. But that kind of situation, then he just immediately put me at ease. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he was wonderful. He was such a consummate professional, but also what a lovely man. Do you know what I mean?
He seems to have really, I guess, evolved into this almost like elderly statesman type role, because I guess in the 90s when you would have been watching him, he was out there, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I guess because he was still drinking at that time, and his performances had a certain nervous, chaotic energy.
And his roles were fantastic. Do you know what I mean? His roles were amazing.
Yeah.
He did so many amazing roles back then as well, do you know what I mean, in that kind of part of his career. But like you say, as he's matured and he's progressed, his performance is still as enigmatic and as wonderful as they were back then.
Would it be safe to say that Snatch was like the kind of the breakthrough, the breakout? Or was it not quite as singular as that?
Yeah, I'd say it was.
Okay, no worries. Should we break it there?
Yeah, pause it?
Because that's a nice little...
Will we be able to pick it up from
there? Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. Oh, is she just
she's
politely waiting? Oh, we can't have that.
No, that's all right. I think she's going to drop the dogs off and then we'll be sweet.
Yeah, no worries.
Hannah does volunteer and she goes out with people who are Tim and Leo.
Oh, wow.
And stuff and spends a bit of time.
And sort of just takes them out for the day and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
Yeah. I was just going to check. Trust me, I'm holding on a lead and I'm holding them back, but they're both so soft.
Jump,
yeah, they're full of water. So don't let them jump up. Oh, yeah. Bonnie and Clyde.
Is it really amazing? Yeah. Amazing.
Right, let me put them in the conservatory with some water and then you should fall asleep. Come on, wait. Good girl.
Hi, Hannah. Nice to meet you.
How are you?
I'm very well, thanks so much.
Right?
I got you a bottle of wine, so thank you.
Oh, that's very kind. Thank you, Matt. How are you doing anyway?
Yeah, I'm good. Just trying to get back into the work groove. You know what it's like after the extended break and relaxation.
It's a very extended break.
Yeah.
Not working till March.
Oh,
so
nice.
Isn't that
I guess you... With a lot of musicians, it's the same thing. It's when you're home, you're fully home.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's
when you're
a
away,
big chunk and it's round the clock. And then, once you're away, it's...
Yeah. Right, I'm off to the bookies now.
Nice.
You having a flutter?
Having a flutter.
with
I volunteer for Loros and he's my Loros. Like, pay one of the patients from Loros. And he likes to go and have a bit on the old GGs.
Why not?
I'm not bothered because I look too as well. Right, I'll see you later, boys.
Yeah, see you later. Thank you very much. What's that breed?
They're Labradoodles.
Right.
They're lovely. They're just so friendly.
Gorgeous temperament.
You know what I mean? They are the two of them. He's the barker. The protector.
Well, they're brother and sister, yeah?
Yeah.
Love it. So I guess we should talk about Snatch to start off, and then we can kind of go from there. Obviously, I'm not just going to go through in a chronological brick by brick part, but... I think Snatch was definitely my introduction to you. And I guess it would be safe to say quite a lot of people would have probably discovered you through Tommy. Do you reckon in that?
Yeah, completely. That was the first big thing I did, you know what I mean? And that was so much fun to do. What a kind of great first job. I'd done loads of little bits and bobs, you know what I mean?
Loads of television.
Yeah.
I saw loads and loads.
Yeah, like
and
the
kind
Bill
of all those
and,
key shows. And
all them little shows where you kind of...
Cut your teeth, right?
Yeah, cut your teeth and get to learn your craft, you know what I mean? In many respects, kind of like serving an apprenticeship, I suppose.
Did you train at all in like a kind of an educational capacity?
Yes,
did you learn
I did.
On the job, as it were?
I know, I did. I went to the Everyman Youth Theatre from like 13 to 19, I think. And I did. I spent a bit of time with the National Youth Music Theatre, which was great fun. And I did a BTEC when I left school. I went and did a BTEC in performing arts, which...
Had you sort of already learned what they were going to teach you on that with the theatre stuff that you'd done.
Kind of, yeah. But it was just that kind of, for me as well, it was still that educational sense and learning to, you know, understand text and things like that and everything and take your script apart and things like that. And also it was, I was 17, so just left school and I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And there was a BTEC National Diploma course just up the road from me in Roby, which is literally 20 minutes away on the bus. So that seemed like the right thing for me to do. Do you know what I mean? I went and I liked it. I liked the facilities and we did little performances and, you know, you got to learn about the lights and...
Oh, so you got the full 360 degree.
Yeah, we had to do dance and everything, do you know what I mean? Which was great. I think Shane and Paddy did a BTEC course as
right,
well.
Right.
Yeah, a performing arts course. So I did that and then after that I went to Rose Bruford, which was in London. I got accepted for quite a few other drama schools, but that was the one that I really wanted to go to at the time because I did. Tim Roth went there.
Another one, right?
Yeah.
Of that same era.
Yeah, of that same ilk as Gary Oldman.
Incredible.
Completely. Yeah, and he's also a marvellous actor, do you know what I mean? That, and
You almost see Combo as a sort of continuation of that Made in Britain kind of iconic?
Not... consciously, I didn't consciously want to do that, but for me, at the time, I watched, not to base my performance on, but I watched a couple of those things, you know, I watched Made in Britain, because I loved that anyway, but I watched that again before we started, and I also watched Greenwich Mean Time, where Gary Oldman and Tim Roth are in that one together. I kind of watched that for the period, do you know what I mean, for that kind of...
just context.
Yeah, yeah, and just the vocabulary and the way they spoke and the kind of the persona that they brought to that era, because that was relevant of that time, do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I kind of watched it for that purposefully. Not to nick anything, although, of course, you know, you're inspired by things like that naturally. Or hopefully they're the kind of things that really, you know, excite you.
I guess if you line yourself up next to stuff like that as well, it sets your sights higher because you know you've got big shoes to fill, right? If you're...
Yeah, but I don't really think of that, you know what I mean? Personally, I don't really think of that. I just think about trying to get the best performance
out of the text at hand.
Yeah, out of what we're creating, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Especially with This Is England, because the way This Is England was shot and the way we did it was, majority of it was improvised, you know what I mean? It was just...
The boys were telling me that. So does Shane essentially just write a script to get it greenlit and approved, and then it's almost like, well, that's there if we need it.
No, not necessarily. I mean, there's certain elements of it that are scripted, you know what I mean, and ideas, but also he'll have like a kind of journey of a possibilities of outcomes within a scene, do you know what I mean? Nothing set in stone until we play with it and create it in that room, which is the genius of Shane.
Yeah.
And also, you know, nobody else works like that.
Is that really unique and rare, is it?
Yeah, completely.
Yeah.
And it's the unpredictability of it, you know what I mean? You never know what's going to happen. We don't even know what's going to happen when we go there. And then on top of that, that can lead to what will happen in the afternoon. Because there's many a time where we did a scene or we did something together and something would come from the conversation or from the scene itself that wasn't there at all. And then Shane would go, right, which would be a nightmare for crew, bless them, and set designers. Yeah. But you kind of have to have every single set that you're working on hot. Do you know what I mean? It has to be ready to go, because me and you might be in a scene together and we're supposed to be doing a lorry drive this afternoon, but we've just done a scene there with someone else and something's come up, so now we're going to your nana's. Do you know what I mean? Because we want to pursue that and see what
proper
that was all about.
Filmmaking.
Yeah, yeah. So it's so exciting.
Andy was saying there was a scene one day where a bunch of the guys run out of a house and Shane had told him on his own, like away from everyone else, to go the other way, so that when it came to the run, everybody goes one way and Andy goes the other, and then he's like, oh, and then he reacts as Gadget in the role and like runs back, and he's like, obviously that was part of him just, you know, manipulating that scene in that way to just
to bring
play
them
to that character
and them little tiny bits of magic, do you know what I mean? So that was it, basically. And then when I went to drama school, I learned quite a bit there, but stuff that I'd already kind of learned along the way, do you know what I mean? I read some outstanding books. books, and anyone that wants to get into acting, I'd definitely recommend one book, which is Respect for Acting by Uta Hagen. That was a great book for me for that kind of intellectualization of it and understanding it in a different way. Do you know what I mean? And then with Snatch, that kind of opened up a few more doors, I think.
What was it like working with Brad Pitt, who just took the fucking bull by the horn with that character, didn't he?
Yeah.
I love seeing him in, like, more supporting roles, like when he's in True Romance as Super. Floyd, the weed smoker. And when he's not the main guy, when he's just almost like a kind of cameo, he somehow seems to go even deeper into the role with those.
I suppose in many respects for that, there's no pressure there, isn't there?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it was a lot of fun. And again, you know, he's an iconic movie star, you know what I mean? But also, what a wonderful man. I learnt a lot from him, a hell of a lot. And, I got on really well with him while I was working with him. We had some really nice bits and bobs. And it was just, I suppose, and for me personally, even today, I try to learn something every single day, you know what I mean? Especially on a set. You're constantly learning. And I think the day that you kind of stop that, all that excitement goes, maybe that's time to call it quits. But I can't see that changing for me. I'm very, 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 very blessed and extremely lucky to do something that I love. Do you know what I mean? At the end of the day, it's a job. I get that, but it's more like a vocation. Do you know what I mean? I really love what I do.
There's so many iconic quotable lines from that film, and I love it. Well, you're like, yeah, I like Dags.
And it was just, Guy was fantastic to work with. Guy was an absolute joy to work with. He really had a great environment on the set, and it was very fun. No one was taken too serious, you know what I mean? And it was just that you felt like you were a part of something that was possibly going to be really good, you know what I mean? It was just so much fun to do. You thought, I'm really enjoying this. Surely, I try not to think about it, but when you're in things like that, you just think, surely this is going to be all right, because we're having such a laugh.
Then incredible cast.
Yeah, an amazing cast. Yeah. Such an eclectic cast as well, do you know what I mean? Lenny James and Dennis Farina, and it was a fantastic...
Even Benicio.
Benicio del Toro, yeah, who was superb, do you know what I mean? Alan
Frankie
Ford,
Fourfingers,
Bricktop, Vinnie Jones is Frankie's.
Why does Bricktop have it in for the Tommy character so much, do you think?
I don't know. I think he just wound him up, didn't he? I think it was just one of them. He was putting loose on her.
Are they Lancashire pigs? Like, who's fucking talking to you, boy?
Talk to you, boy. Yeah. I don't know. It's just that I think we kind of the guy really played on that.
Yeah.
Which was kind of funny. I suppose that young kid who's a bit out of his depth trying to like get involved and snap, shut up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which was good. And there was that one little moment that I kind of had, because it was so much fun, and it was really, and I didn't personally see it as violent. It was comedically brutal in many ways. Do you know what I mean? But it was brutal as well. It was the reality of that brutality. And for me, there was one little moment where, he gets knocked out and then the gypsies are about to kick off. And it's that, and I thought, right, okay, maybe that's a little cat. And I thought, maybe this is an opportunity, not an opportunity, but to be truthful to the character. Like you've said, he's popping up going, oh, what are these Lancashire pigs? And he's very naive and gullible. And you know what I mean? He's that Will's not a bit of him at all. He's not a part of that world.
I know exactly the scene you mean, when Golden Brown comes in and it's Tommy the tit should be praying. And if
And for me, I just thought, right, I'm going to go for this. Do you know what I mean? I'm going to show the brutality of violence in that respect. I'm not saying I came from a violent background or not like that. That's not what I'm saying at all. But I'd seen violence and I'd been around, certain things that had happened and stuff like that. So it was kind of using that memory recall of stuff that I've seen and how horrific it can be, how it can change lives dramatically, do you know what I mean? And I just really went for it in that one little bit that I had to do. And it was right at the end of the day, and he just came over to me and going, right, come on, you got one take. And I was like, okay. It was like 10 minutes to go or something. I just went off. I went and found a little space on my own, got into me little zone and thingy. And I suppose that's where all that stuff of being at the youth theatre and learning techniques for me, myself personally, to have my little bag of tools that I could dip into. And then I just went back into that position, then got in there, and they were great, shouting around me and all that kind of, you know, that atmosphere. And then I just went for that scene in that little bit. And
I remember it well, and I actually remember the look in your face and your eyes very well, because it is one of those more, as you say, unsettling,
yeah,
and perhaps dark and troubling moments, because there's the other one is obviously where Mickey's mum's caravan gets burnt down with her in it, and you see Brad doing that. But they're those two scenes, aren't they, that I think stand out as being out of step with the perhaps tone of a lot of the rest of the film. But that's the brilliance of people like Guy and Tarantino, obviously very much that same school of style, isn't it? But you can flip from comedic to quite unsettling at the flip of a coin. And then
this is, you know, you get into it, you try and believe everything that's being done as an actor, and it's like, oh, this, hang on, this is a bit real, isn't it? This is kind of brutal. Yeah. So that was a lot of fun.
How did you find yourself in Gangs of New York?
I auditioned.
That's 2002, is that? That came out?
I think so,
Snatch 2000. So, and this is obviously all before This Is England still.
Yes, yeah. So I'd done Snatch, and I was doing Band of Brothers.
Oh, right.
I had nice little role in that, and I was doing that, and I think I'd just finished that. And then I went for an audition they were like, oh, you know, would you like to audition for this Martin Scorsese film? It's set in 1800s, and it's, you know, to play like an Irish kind of little street urchin. That's gonna keep beating. Can you hear it on there?
You can a little bit, yeah. What is it?
It's
the washing machine.
It's
just saying it's finished, it's ready. What's your cat called, Steve?
You know what? Forgot.
Ziggy. Love it.
Right, sorry, man. He stops, lad.
No worries. It's all good. It's loose. It's fine by me. So, the audition for Gangs in New York comes about.
Yeah.
Through phone call back then?
It was a phone call. It was a phone call from my agent saying going to London. It was one of them literally going to London tomorrow. Do you know what I mean? So I was buzzing. I went in, read it. That's where I met Ellen Lewis, who's Marty's casting director. I went in and I read it, and she liked what I did. And then we did it again, and we were just having a bit of a laugh. She asked where I was from, where my accent was from, and she'd obviously never heard a Scouser before.
She's like, yeah, I think I know it. Yeah.
Where are you from? Oh, is it near
London?
Like, the Beatles? Oh my god. So and then that was it, and then didn't hear nothing for ages.
Is that often the way it goes?
It did back then, yeah. It was, and especially, you know, with something like that, I think they were seeing every single actor in or around my age at that time, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is understandable. Because it was a Martin Scorsese film, so everyone's going to want to have a go at it. And then I had to go for this bag of shite, because I hadn't had no work for a bit. And I had to go and have an audition, and this was about 4 weeks later, maybe. I had to go for an audition for this absolute bag of shite. I'm not going to say what it was, but it was disgusting. It was terrible. And I was like, oh, I'm in London getting ready to... This is the life of an actor, especially in them days.
Crippling uncertainty around every corner.
Yeah, of course, completely. And, you know, going to do things, thinking, oh, this is terrible. I don't really want to... Oh, of course, I suppose I've got to go. Because you need to eat. Do you know what I mean? You've got to pay your rent and all that. And I was just in a little cafe having a cup of coffee, and then the phone went. It was my agent. She said, Jane said, that audition for Scorsese. I went, yeah. She went, well, you've got to go to Rome next week. And I was like, what? And she went, you've got it. I went, and I was buzzing. I was absolutely buzzing. And the first thing I said to her was, does that mean I don't have to go for this audition? And she went, no, you don't have to go for that. I was buzzing. And then
is that where gangs were shot then? A lot of it was Rome.
We did the whole lot in Rome.
Really?
But while I was in that, I'd love to, you know, if they ever remember it. I'd always remember it. While I was in that little cafe, there was a man and a wife and their daughter sat around next to me, and they could hear me going, "Oh, that's great." Da-da-da-da. And they went, "What is it?" And I went, "Oh, I'm an actor. I've just got a part in a film with Martin Scorsese." And they were made up, do you know what I mean? So I got to share that little buzz with someone.
Yeah,
and then that was
there's
it.
Nothing worse than that, right? When you get a bit of news like that and you look around and you're on your own and you're like, oh.
Well, that also happened a lot, you know what I mean? Back in the day, a lot of actors will empathise with that completely. You get that news for some kind of work like that and you just go, oh, well, you don't know what to do with yourself.
I'm a DJ, so a lot of my professional career is spent, you know, travelling alone and playing alone. And yeah, there's a lot of those moments where you look around to share the moment with someone and then you're like, oh.
Oh, okay.
Oh, well.
Yeah, I'll wait to see
still
someone.
Pretty good, though.
Yeah, I'll wait to see someone till I tell them.
And so the whole thing was shot in Rome. I never knew that.
Yeah, we shot it at Cinecittà Studios. I think that's closed down now. That was where they did, like, Ben Hur and Fellini did a lot of films there. And it was an amazing experience. We were there for about 7 months, I think.
I mean, Rome's an amazing city anyway. Yeah. Just the history there. And I remember when that movie came out, I'd grown up watching Leo in like, what's it in Gilbert Grape, there we go, Basketball Diaries.
Yeah.
Even like The Beach and Romeo and Juliet and Titanic, even though he's kind of, I guess, the poster boy, he was always incredible.
Yeah.
Like always an amazing actor. Yeah. And I remember that was, for me, I guess, the moment that the boy became the man.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that was the
That's
role.
That's where he kind of came into his own, do you know what I mean? That, like you've said, that transgression of being a young, even like Basketball Diaries, I think it was teens, wasn't it?
Mm.
Late teens, and phenomenal performances and Gilbert Grape and stuff like that. But I think that was the one where, like you said, that he transcended and he was like, boss, look, this is me. Here's what I can do. And to stand there and hold his own against Daniel Day-Lewis and, do you know what I mean?
Especially that, in that role.
In that role, like. Exactly, yeah. And he even his shape had changed a lot, do you know what I mean, in that?
It's the way he walks, like hunched over, isn't it, when he comes out for that opening fight scene and he's got that amazing long, tall top hat, which just accentuates his freakishness even more.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
Did he actually wear a glass eye as well? Because when he does that ting-ting with the knife to the eye, it obviously
not
makes
all the
that
time,
noise.
No, not all the time. No, not all the time. But that was amazing. That was a hell of an experience, do you know what I mean, to spend a lot of time with people like that.
Yeah.
Like Jim Broadbent and Eddie
again,
Marsden.
That cast.
Yeah, it was a phenomenal cast.
So it's 7 months, you said?
Yeah, I think it was about 7 months in total. Yeah.
And who was the female lead?
Cameron Diaz.
Because she's kind of really the only female character, isn't she?
In
so
there,
she's,
yeah.
She's just out there with all you lads for 7 months, like going mad.
yeah, she was. I was, me and Hannah moved out there. Because we had a little flat in Beckenham. And because it was going to be, I think originally I was only supposed to be there for about 4 months and then it got extended. So instead of me having to go on my jack and being stuck, not stuck, but being in London, we both decided to go out there together. So we lived there basically for 7 months. It was amazing.
That must be one of the great joys of the job.
Yeah,
weren't you saying a similar
like
thing
that,
with pirates as well?
We had a nice little house out there and then in Australia and, you know, things like that are lovely because you get to share it with family and friends as well. Do you know what I mean? We had loads of visitors in Rome and we had some family and friends come out to see us in Australia. And also in Hawaii where they filmed, I think it was Pirates 4. So them kind of things, they're amazing. Do you know what I mean? Them things are unbelievable.
Yeah, it's the experience of the gig is the one thing which is magical.
Mm.
And then you have the experience around the gig.
Yeah.
Which is almost like a paid for holiday.
Yes.
It's basically amazing, isn't it?
Although I'm working my ass off. Like,
they're having a great time.
Yeah, but I'm the one who's up at 5. But then the quality of that is, you know, you get to have time off and you're with your family because there's nothing worse than being away. Yeah, it's that kind of solitary. Like I said before, you know, it's a very nomadic existence, but in the same respect, is that kind of time when you're away. And you're on your jack and you spend a lot of time, you know, which when you're busy is great because you have to get ready for the next day. So you constantly never get a chance to switch off. But then that's why when you've got your family around you, it's great because you have that essence of normality, you know, coming home. And
so you don't end up like Martin Sheen in Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, yeah.
In the apartment
yeah,
with the fan very, going round.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, that's happened to quite a few people there.
Did you have many fun nights out with Leo on that set then?
Yeah, loads. Yeah? Loads, yeah. We had loads, yeah. Yeah, lots.
Any stories you can share?
Not really. No. No, just
got to ask.
He's a wonderful man, do you know what I mean? He's a very dear friend. I've known him since then. We've kept in touch and we see each other.
He seems like, obviously I don't know him from Adam, but he seems like the real deal.
Yeah.
As a human.
Yeah, he is completely. Really is very genuine.
And I heard on the Pit podcast you did that at the end of that experience you kind of went up to Marty and you were like, any chance of a...
Well, I said to him was, look, that was amazing. That thank you so much. Do you know what I mean? It was an honour. And he said to me, he went, we'll do it again. And I was like, no, don't say that. Don't say that and don't do it.
Yeah.
He was like, no, I promise you, yeah, we'll do it again. I was like, okay, all right, I'll hold you to that.
And we can talk about something in a bit, maybe not too in depth, but...
Hopefully he did.
But Broadwalk, was that the first time?
Yes, yeah, then that came about, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Was that kind of through him and through working with him?
Just
on
completely
games,
nothing else but him, do you know what I mean? Nothing else but him. And that was kind of... I mean, I know I've said this before and people who've heard it before might be a bit bored of it, but after This Is England, I couldn't get no work. I just couldn't get a job, do you know what I mean? I don't know what it was. Maybe some people thought that I was really like that character, or, do you know what I mean? They'd forgotten that I'd done some work before and things, and Shane has a habit of using non-actors and, you know, or people who haven't acted much before and giving them an opportunity, which to Shane's, because of how he works, that's fantastic, and it gives them the opportunity, do you know what I mean? So I couldn't get arrested. Literally couldn't get arrested. And I'd felt like I'd just...
That performance
the
is
best
so
thing I've ever done.
Amazing as well. Like,
yeah, thank you. I just felt like I'd literally given about 75 pints of blood for that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'd gone here, look, here's a bit of me and here's, you know, I've managed to do, in that respect, you know, really, really create a character. And it just wasn't happening. It was just one of them things. It just wasn't happening for a long time. And then I nearly became a youth worker.
Did that hit you hard in a mental way? Did you get depressed? Did you get down? Did you feel self-doubt? Or was it more just annoying and...
It was kind of...
A little bit worrying financially.
Well, yeah, very worrying financially, yeah. Do you know what I mean? And kind of, if I'm really honest, luckily what kind of pulled me through was the fact that we had Grace and Alfie. As well,
they're
do you know
kids.
What I mean? Yeah, my two kids. And obviously Hannah and Grace and Alfie were the people that really kind of got me through that bit. And close friends, very close friends and family who told me to just hang in there. Do you know what I mean? Just keep the faith, because it will happen. Something will come from it. Do you know what I mean? Or the next job will come, kind of thing. But yeah, there was moments when I was ready to pack it all in. I had to be talked out of just packing it in. I was actually very close to getting an application form, because there was a job available. And I'd been working in the local youth centre with the kids and stuff like that. Just making little films with them. And getting it was voluntary at first. And then I was getting a little bit of money for helping out and stuff, do you know what I mean? Which was kind of keeping me going. And Hannah was working as well. She was teaching at the time. So... I'd kind of, you know, it was me wrapped around the kids and being a stay-at-home dad at that point, you know what I mean? I think it was just Grace, actually. No, Alfie was about as well. And there was that really serious contemplation of,
maybe that was all it was meant to be. And
yeah, yeah, there was. There was that moment, you know what I mean? And there was that kind of acceptance of that moment and thinking, oh, well, I've really enjoyed it. You know, it was a dream in the first place, so we've achieved quite a bit and we've had a lovely time, so maybe it's time to grow up and do something proper.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And that was it. I was ready to do that. But thankfully, like I said, close friends and family taught me out of it, and I kept on going, and a couple of little things came up, and then literally I think I'd just done a little tiny part in something, and then... The phone went,
Is there a separate phone for these jobs? It's like the bat phone.
No,
it rings.
It's not fucking Batman. Bells and whistles and all kinds of. No, it's just a phone in the house. Back then we had house phones. You know what I mean? So the phone went and I picked it up and it was my manager in America, Ben, and he just said, "Would you be in the next 20 minutes, Martin Scorsese wants to speak to you." I was like, "What?" He went, yeah, seriously. I was like, "Oh, no, okay. Of course I'm in, yeah." And then he phoned me up and we had a quick little chat, very quick little chat. And at the end of it, he just went to him. Because it was kind of, he went, "Hey, how you doing?" I was like, "Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Yeah, okay. You busy at the moment? You working?" I was like, no, not working at the minute, Matt. No. "Okay, you been good? Is your wife good?" And I was like, yeah. "Okay, now I've got this thing and it's called Boardwalk Empire, and we go in about a month. But I don't want you to do any research. I just want you to think about it. And I'd like you to play Al Capone." And I was like, "Okay." And he's like, "Okay, so I'll get them to talk to you, and we'll sort it all out, and I'll see you in about a month." I was like, "Okay, cheers, thanks, bye." And then I went, "What was that?" And I went, "I don't know. I honestly don't know what just happened. So I think he's just asked me to play Al Capone." She went, "What?" And I went, "Yeah, fucking think he's just asked me to play Al Capone in this thing called Boardwalk Empire or something." And that was it. That was how that came about.
I love that show so much.
It was great.
Show. Again, yeah. Like the lavish set design, the costume, the music. And Steve Buscemi is one of my all-time favourite actors. And I love seeing him in lead roles.
Yeah.
Again, he's one of those people who's fantastic when he's like a little kind of supporting cameo type. But when he's like front and centre, you really get to see his acting chops, don't you?
Yeah.
And Nucky Thompson's like such a great three-dimensional character.
Hell of a role. Yeah.
And I love, who's the other great actor in that? The black guy who was in The Wire, who plays Chalky White. You know the guy I mean?
Yeah, his name's gone from my head now. Michael Williams. Williams. Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
Yeah. How long were you on that, the shoot?
It ran into, I mean, the first episode was a feature film, basically.
Yeah.
I think it was 90 minutes. And I think it was the most expensive pilot HBO I've ever done. And at that time,
and it looks at you, you know, you can see that money on the screen, can't you?
Yeah, I think it was like 38 mil or something like that. For a pilot. Wow. I know, yeah.
But I hope this gets commissioned.
Well, I think it was kind of, it's gonna, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Which was great for us. There was never any big, massive question of it, not at that beginning stage. And I think the pilot took about 6 weeks or something like that, maybe a bit longer. And then the show, I think, itself ran for five series. I think it was only five series. Yeah.
And are you then, after that, is it then Public Enemies? Or is there a bit of a gap?
I can't remember. I don't know the actual date of that, you know, because I think it might work out that I'd kind of done that before, hadn't I? I don't know. Do you know what I mean? I'm really confused. I think, or maybe I got that and then I got that in between that, do you know what I mean?
Right.
Waiting to go again the next.
So it's like a kind of a bus scenario where you're there waiting for ages for one and nothing comes.
Exactly.
And then
wallop. Yeah. I think that's how it worked anyway. I think so. I'll have to check them dates.
Was it always the intention to do television spin-offs of This Is England? Or was it just the actual
unprecedented success
of the film?
That was never in any kind of dialogue or discussion back in the day when we were making the film. And if I'm really honest, I was extremely apprehensive, personally.
Because the film was so...
Because it was
great.
Such a standalone thing, and you know, it was very dear to people's hearts.
That legacy, perhaps.
Completely.
Yeah.
And it was very dear to people's hearts, wasn't it? And people really, you know, had a soft spot for it, you know what I mean? So when Shane.
That was also before that kind of. Because that kind of thing now is commonplace, isn't it? The prequel,
yes.
The sequel, the spin off.
Yeah.
Around the time of 86, that wasn't really
that
a done
reinvented
thing,
the mold,
was
it? Didn't it? That was
it
the
did completely,
that did it
yeah.
on its own, yeah. Because I don't think it ever really nothing that I'd watched.
No, me neither.
Before or came from something like that. Do you know what I mean? But when he said, look, we're thinking of doing this, we're going to do this, I was on Boardwalk Empire at the time, and I was a little bit kind of, oh, I'm not sure about that. It's, are you sure? And he was like, yeah, I think it'll really work. We, you know, we've got some great ideas. And then he obviously got the writer involved, and they just came up with a great first kind of draft and story and plan for the first series, do you know what I mean? And then, obviously, because it's Shane, I said, yeah, of course, yeah, go on then, go on. But at first, I was extremely apprehensive. I thought, oh, maybe this might work.
When you went in to film that final scene in the movie with Andrew Shim, how do you prepare for a scene like that that's so heavy and so, I guess, emotionally draining as well, right?
Yeah, after you've done it, you're exhausted completely, do you know what I mean? But with respect to the preparation, you just kind of lock yourself. You kind of get right into it. And, you know, I'm all, once you say cut, that's it. For me, that throw it away, do you know what I mean? And personally, that's just how I like to work. Throw it away and just, you know, let's have a laugh. Let's try and get rid of it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you need a little bit of time to prepare to get into that kind of headspace and into that zone. And with that, I don't know if Tomo told you, but because we all spend so much time together, it sounds cruel and it sounds horrible, and technically it is, but it looks amazing. We told Tomo that I was really going to beat him up, do you know what I mean? When he was in that little kind of airing cupboard.
Yeah.
So everything you see from him is him thinking that I'm actually beating him up. And while he was in there, the costume department and the makeup department's putting all the blood on, and I'm hitting this leather sofa, and he's
in that hole taking it all in.
And he's all in there. And then what happened was, then they sneaked out and we got right into it. So I'm kind of staying into it and doing it and stuff. And then we put him in a position and put all the time that one camera's on him in there. So then that camera comes in with him into the room, and there's another camera in the room. So his reaction when he sees it is true.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? And he really believes it. And which then, like I said before, that kind of, you know, it's like working with someone who was as skilled. And I've been lucky enough to see the likes of Daniel Day-Lewis, do you know what I mean? Who played that performance of Bill and being on a set with him, obviously, and watching how he worked and stuff like that, and being a method actor to an extent, and to watch it be real as real, because you can't get no realer than that reaction, because that kid loved us both off set, very close with Jimmy and very close with me. So for him to think I'd done that to him just blew his little mind, you know what I mean? I told you it's fucking cruel.
But it delivers.
So you'd psychically, you're actually psychologically damaging his little head for that one little piece, do you know what I mean? But then instantly it's like, no, it's okay, look, see, we're okay. But he hated me all day. All that day he hated me. He wouldn't fucking look at me.
If he did that to me.
Wouldn't look at me. He was going, and then he'd go, and then Shane would say things like, look, if you get it right, if you get it done, we'll only have to do it once. And he'd look at me and he'd go, are you really going to do it? And I'd be like, yeah, sorry, it's got to be done. Do you know? So we played that the whole day, do you know what I mean? So when that happens, that's, if you notice, I think he even goes to throw a dig at me.
Yeah.
I think he does go to throw a dig at me.
Well, there's a couple of moments like that throughout the film when he does go for you, and you know, you're like, well, this one's got more spirit than all of you. And,
yes.
And he's all in on it, isn't he?
Yeah.
His fervour and his anger.
Well, he would have hit me in the face if I didn't stop him, do you know what I mean? Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. That really puts you into the character.
Yeah.
Because in that situation, 9 times out of 10, you know, and no disrespect, it's the way it is, and it's for safety. It'd be like, right, well, I'm going to try and punch you and you're going to just moving, so you choreograph it. When you got a little 14-year-old kid who just wants to knock the shit out of you, you've got to kind of handle it. One is you for self-protection and self-preservation, but essentially as the character and how the character would.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Which was kind of amazing.
What an incredible acting school for him as well,
of course,
for him to come up.
And then for us to go, you know what I mean? Look, it's all pretend. Look, didn't do it. Look, and he's like, "What? That's not. Oh God!" But explain the process to him. Then after that, you know what I mean? And later on, and then yeah, it was very cruel at the time, but looks amazing.
It does. It really does. Yeah. And I mean, that role is so incredible, mate. And did you relish the opportunity to come back and revisit it and somehow try and make him a sympathetic character after everything that he'd done in the movie, because he almost becomes an unlikely hero. And obviously, I'm sure everybody listening to this has seen all the series, so spoiler alert, whatever. But the way that you meet your end at the end of 90, you almost feel sad and you don't want him to die because of everything that he's done since.
Well, that was,
but then
kind
you go,
of...
oh, well, actually, that's why they always wanted to do that to him. And then you go back to there. And I love roles like that, that take you on those journeys where you hate them, you despise them, and then you sympathize for them, and then they become almost like an anti-hero. And he's one of those great characters in that sense, isn't he?
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, that's a lovely, beautiful observation of what we did as a collective, especially because that was the thing. Like I said, you know, I was kind of a bit apprehensive at first, and it was Shane that said, no, you know, it's and then when he explained the idea and the journey that that character was going to take, it was amazing. Do you know what I mean? I went, oh, okay. Because it was like, look, we're going to make a completely different person. We're going to make him completely different. He's been away. He's been away for a long time, so he hasn't been in that area. He's been away, he's been with his demons, and he's completely changed. He's going to be a completely different person. And I did, if I'm honest, I did one of the best, like this is what I'm saying, you know, people say about drama school and stuff like that, and I get it, and you know, and yeah, it's great if you can go, that's fine, especially it's more difficult now financially for a majority, of people, do you know what I mean, who are from working class backgrounds. It's just a fact. I'm not trying to get political or not, and I'm just stating a fact. It's really difficult, really difficult. But Shane sent me an exercise, which I learned more about in the process of that one exercise than you could have ever learned at 3 years of drama school.
When he sent you out in the hobo gear?
Yeah, just sent me out. And we got, you know, just got me ready and sent me out, took all the money off me and sent me on the street, put them tattoos on my face. And
your hair was long right at the time because you were doing Broadwalk. And
yep, hair was a bit longer and all scatty, and I'd looked nothing like, you know, I wasn't recognisable. And to be out there and to just immerse myself in that through Shane, and that's me having the trust in Shane. Yeah, don't get me wrong, I was shit myself at times. Do you know what I mean? Especially when I was underground in that little cafe and all that, and I was with homeless people. One, I was thinking, oh, what if these clock me and think I'm taking a piss? And two, I was genuinely scared for, you know, I had to say, oh, I've just come out of Nick and all that. I've been in Liverpool for a bit and I've been on the run and things. So that exercise and that process in itself was unbelievable. And then for me to get the bunk on the tram back to get back to the studio where we were all rehearsing was I felt invisible on them streets. Do you know what I mean? I've never felt anything like that.
And that was the main objective, right?
That was the main objective.
You understand what it's like to be a nobody, to
have no self worth, for people to just walk past me, and I'm even to be looking at people. Because then I just went, all right, I'm going to go with the character, and to just be looking at people, but trying to look at people with kind of kindness in my eyes, and, you know, trying to smile through my eyes at people. People would just take one glance at me and just put their head down, do you know what I mean? And a few people even walked across the other side of the street, do you know what I mean? So to have that experience was phenomenal. And then hopefully I managed to capture some of that, and then the journey I went on with Shane for that, my specific character. Because the other thing about it was to watch all the other characters have their opportunity. Do you know what I mean? That were smaller roles in the film. Because to me, there's no small roles. There's only small actors. Stanislavski said that. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So for me to watch those characters progress and be given an opportunity to show what they could do, if anything, makes it so much of an ensemble. Do you know what I mean?
And every single actor in their role has their moment, don't they?
Of course, everybody has
that
moment.
I think was why the TV shows were such a success.
Yeah, and then, I mean, look at the last series, Chanel, do you know what I mean? Chanel, who took that small character and that lovely little journey, she went on to be given that opportunity, and she fucking destroyed it. Do you know what I mean? She and Gadget.
Well, the scene with the two of them in that field after she's been in the trailer with the blokes.
It's amazing, horrible, moment. But beautiful. Do you know what I mean? Because she's just been through all that. Yeah. And for everybody to be given that opportunity to have that chance, do you know what I mean? Which was one of the main reasons as well why I said I'd do it. It was just a joy, do you know, an absolute joy, a joy to do.
Talk me through real quickly working on that scene with Vicky, where you come to the house and you know she's just killed her father. The character's just killed her father, and you obviously come in and you go, right, I'm gonna save the situation and cover you up.
Well, what happened was, Johnny and Vicky had done some stuff already together. I'd been away because I think I have to go back to New York to film Boardwalk Empire. So then I came back.
Is your schedule at this point just nuts as well?
It's nuts, but it was brilliant. You know what I mean? It was like
you've gone from one extreme to the other. Like.
Yeah, yeah, but with that same amount of creativity and that same drive on set. Do you know what I mean? And that's it. That's why. Only difference between them certain things is budget, you know what I mean? But still, each person, from the painter to the sound, the costume, they all put 1,000,000% into it because they passionately believe in the project. And that he showed me what had happened. He showed me the scene where he rapes her. Do you know what I mean? He showed me.
Which is one of the most harrowing and horrendous and difficult scenes in television history, I think, to watch. Yeah. It's really bleak, isn't it?
Yeah. Where he rapes young, what's her name?
Yep. Yeah. Kelly, is it?
Yeah, Kelly, that's right, yeah. Where he showed me that.
Oh, no, what is it? Is it not Kelly?
Yeah, it is Kelly.
It is Kelly, yeah.
Yeah. He showed me that. And I was like, he went, so, okay. And then... as the character then, do you know what I mean? I wanted to kill him. But then he'd also, we'd created it and we'd said, because we'd spent a lot of time in that rehearsal process, that she told me about all this stuff, do you know what I mean? So then to try and add something, not add something, but, you know, to make their relationship back in the day slightly beautiful, she told him that she'd told nobody else, do you know what I mean? Because he was the only one that had known. And yet he was a bit older and it might have been a little bit wrong at the time, do you know what I mean? But that's why he was so in awe with her, do you know what I mean? And felt so close to her and so connected to her because she'd shared stuff with him that she'd never told anyone. And for the first time in his life, he'd never told a soul what she'd told him. He just hadn't done that. So it showed the beauties and the qualities that he did have, do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And it gives him the hope in himself of redemption, right?
Of course, yeah. So we managed to pull him out. And it was basically... they did it. They shot their stuff in that room and I'm round the corner and then Shane just goes, right, tell him to go. So then I go and I knock on the door.
So it was that's how it was done?
That's how it was done, yeah. The same kind of thing. Go in there and I'm, okay, shit, what do we do? Do you know what I mean? And what's happened? And
did you not have any idea what you were going to be walking into?
Not at all, no, not at all. It's just live, alive, hold here and then, do you know what I mean? That's what it is.
Because it's when you're getting his fingers and pressing the prints. And was that just made up by you in the spot?
Yeah, yeah, because... yeah, because I didn't want her to get the blame, do you know what I mean? So it was kind of, and then you're rationally thinking as the character, okay, well, so how do I make this look like it's me then?
Yeah.
So, and smacking him with me set, him, I think I bit his ear as well, something like that, do you know what I mean? I didn't bite. I did a little bit. After that, I went, Johnny, I'm so sorry. He went, no, sure, that's right. Fucking really hurt my earlobe, don't you? And Johnny was magnificent, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was amazing as that character. And just the whole ambience that Shane creates on set is fantastic.
And when it came to you dying, spoiler alert, when the guys take you off in the van,
yeah,
was that a difficult scene for you to shoot? Because it was it like saying goodbye to a part of your life?
No, not at all. It was more being true to what was going on. Do you know what I mean? And like I said earlier on, with that little bit in Snatch, that bringing the truth out of it. Do you know what I mean? And the fact that Yeah, this man. And what we found throughout that process and through creating that storyline and that lovely storyline that had been written, was the man had completely redeemed himself. He turned his life around completely.
That process, yeah.
But sometimes it doesn't matter. Do you know what I mean? Karma is what karma is, or however you want to look at it. Even though you've changed, the people around you sometimes haven't, and sometimes if you do a wrong, it can be so bad at the time that it will come and haunt you at some point.
And that character knew that.
Yeah, so he always had like that in his life. So do you know what I mean? It's that kind of acceptance, fair. And it's like, oh, okay, this is. But then still, it's that kind of, because it reminded me of, is it Angels with Dirty Faces? That lovely, and see, this is not me consciously wanting to do that at the time. But now talking to you about it and expressing it and seeing it pop into my head and go, oh, shit, okay, so that's... See, there's that lovely bit, I think it's Angels with Dirty Faces, with James Cagney, where the priest says to him, do you know what I mean? Look, you walk down that block and you scream for your life to let all these other men in here know that's not right. Do you know what I mean? And he's like, and I know you're a proud man and all that, but he basically says to him, you know, let them see your fear. And he's holding it back. And it had a massive impact on me as a kid, that moment. I watched it with my nana. Now I can see it clearly, do you know what I mean? I think it's Angels with
Those scenes that stay with you forever.
Yeah. And that moment. And then while I was in that moment myself of this man going, okay, sound, then it was like, no, he's going to die now, but he's got so much to live for at the minute. Do you know what I mean? He's got loads to live for. He's got a lot to live for. So it was that kind of breaking out. And again, you know, he cut it out, or I think he changed the sound. Sometimes in them circumstances, you can't help but use your own truth and reality. So I think I shouted Grace and Alfie's name out in that situation. Do you know what I mean? These are little things, little tricks that you kind of do. And I think he managed to cut that out. But it's that desperation of, oh, no, hang on, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. Shit, no, I don't. I'm trying to hold on. Do you know what I mean? But it's completely out of your control.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Like the history of Stephen Graham death scenes. My favorite one, just to lighten the mood a bit, is the film The Season of the Witch, where you get mauled apart by werewolves.
Oh, yeah.
That's one hell of a death scene.
Yeah. Yeah, I've died quite a few times. I got trampled on and smashed with rifles in gangs in New York.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I got
by
shot
about 50 coppers. Wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, just smacking my head and all that. Yeah, yeah. I got shot brilliantly in
Christian Bale taken out. Yeah,
with about 21
Tommy gun still going off as you're
them
dying.
Them squibs didn't half it. You know, they caught
really?
Me in the face. I think I had something like 22 squibs on me. I was like a little thing like that rolled out, and he just went pop, 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 pop. Yeah, I've had some fun deaths, some really fun deaths.
Are they fun to film, or are they kind of a little bit physically punishing?
Well, they can be hard graft, but they're so much fun to do.
And how did that wolf scene get shot? How did you go about shooting a death scene like that?
There was a couple of wolves about, and I was like, I'm not lying down here. And he went like, no, don't worry, we'll see them, and then we'll CGI the rest of it. And I was like, yeah, thanks for that. Do you know what I mean? But I did see them all on the day and that, and they'd come up and see it in moments, and then put in the rest of it. I think they attacked the dummy on the floor.
Right. Yeah. And Nicolas Cage, how's it working with him? Because he is just one of those larger-than-life characters.
He was sound. Like, he was a good bloke. Yeah, he was really nice.
It's Ron Perlman
Ron
as well.
Ron Perlman was lovely. Yeah, got on really well with him. Yeah, they were great. They were top fellas.
And were you just basically out in the woods with him for a few days, just kind of?
Well, we filmed little bits in the mountains, but it was all in Budapest, and quite a bit of it was in the studio as well, but we did quite a bit up in the mountains, which was good fun.
Nice. And Public Enemies, I want to touch on real quick, working with Johnny Depp. He's someone who doesn't do many gangster roles, but in Donnie Brasco, Black Mass and that, he's so good. And I heard the excellent story on Pip's podcast about how you did the audition tape. I wonder if you wouldn't mind just recounting real quick.
Yeah, it was just... they asked me to put myself on tape. So me and Hannah helped me out, and she recorded it. And obviously, I didn't have a gun lying around the house. And Alfie was at that age as well. I didn't want him to have guns when he was a kid. You know what I mean? It's just not for me. So I used his golf club, his little plastic golf club, and pretended to hold up a bank and be Babyface Nelson.
Fully in it, like...
Yeah, fully in it, like, proper, like, get down, what about it, all that kind of stuff. And then at the end of the tape, I just lifted up the golf club and went, thank you. And then when I got there alone, most of the actors had done, like, 25 recalls, and, you know, one of them had done 25 recalls, and one of them had done, like, 5, 6... And he went to me, how many did you do? And I went, I just put myself on tape. And I felt really bad. And then when I met Michael Mann, he came up to me and straight away, when I thought your tape was great, I was like, thank you very much.
Do you think that little bit of the human touch at the end helped seal the deal?
Yeah, I really do. I genuinely think that. Do you know what I mean? Here's me with a plastic golf club, black and orange, in my hand, and going, yeah, thanks for that. And me, normal voice then, as soon as I've done the take, do you know what I mean? I think it must have helped him anyways.
What a psychotic, brilliant character to get your teeth into as well. He's just one of those people, I guess, like the line is referred to the Joker in the Batman movies, but he's like one of those people who just wants to watch the world burn, like doesn't really care about anything.
Yeah, I read a couple of books on Babyface Nelson. He was a really interesting fella, do you know what I mean?
What was his story? What was the kind of reason why he was the way he was, if you had to hazard a guess?
The thing was as well, he loved his missus.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I kind of took a lot of that elements into the same, which I read when I did my research for Al Capone as well. He loved his wife and he loved his boy, but this Babyface Nelson, he loved his missus, and him and his missus used to rob banks together. Do you know what I mean? And he was from like a semi-decent background as well. As a kid, he just had that switch where he just fucking was loopy, proper loopy. Do you know what I mean? Which was great fun to play as an actor.
I'll bet.
Yeah, because you've just got scale to do anything. Do you know what I mean?
And work at Bale and Depp drastically different in their approaches? Because you obviously have a couple of scenes with them individually. There's the fight scene where you die, and that's kind of when you're all together. But I guess you've got a good bit of one-on-one time with both of them.
For me personally, I find them both really lovely. I've really broke the ice with Christine. He was in, you know, we had like a big makeup truck and he was up the top there and I was down here. I was waiting to get my makeup done or something and blew my nose. And I just threw this tissue and it just went right in the bin. And it was a great shot and I couldn't help it. And I just went, in one, bully special prize. And then I sat down and I just heard him laughing his head off. And I looked up and he went, you get nothing in this game for two in a bed. And I went, oh, no. And he said it right. He went, stay out of the black and into the red. You're getting it on in this game for two in a bed. And I just went, whoa. And then I forgot. And I went, oh, because then I went, oh, you're English, aren't you?
Yeah.
And then from that moment, we kind of had a little relationship. Do you know what I mean? I thought he was a lovely lad. He was really nice. He was He was very accommodating. He's a consummate professional, but he was just adorable to work with. And there was one bit where I'm running through the woods and all that, and he's chasing me and everything. And I've gone down this fucking big hill, and it's about 3 a.m. I'm down this big hill, and we used to do, you know, we used to have quite a laugh, me and him. And I'm walking up this hill again to get ready to do another take, and I look, and he's down, and he goes, "Oi!" And he's down on the floor, and I looked at him, and he's on the grass, and he goes, "All the undergrowth and the wubberwee and the schwubberwee down here." And I was just laughing my head off. It was kind of TV shows from when we were kids that we clicked with, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
As you would someone of a similar age.
I guess he's one of those dudes who's probably misrepresented because of that whole thing where he has the go at the lighting guy, you know, that famous thing.
And people don't have a fucking bad day.
And it's,
you know,
like,
I mean?
You know, I think people can run away with stuff like that and go, "Oh, he's just this super serious." Like,
he's not. He wasn't at all with me. He was a boss mate. He was a boss mate for that time and period. Yeah. I did that job. Do you know what I mean? We used to have a right laugh. He loves a joke. He was really good fun. Can't have to tell a great joke as well. He was just lovely for me personally. And Johnny's adorable. Do you know what I mean? What a lovely man he was to work with.
How many films have you done with him now?
Three. Yeah, he's a top man.
Seems like he's... I did a podcast with the comedian Doug Stanhope. I don't know if you know
him. Yes, yes.
But he said him and Johnny are very good friends, and they just kind of get up to all sorts of mischief together. And
yeah.
He's one of those dudes who's obviously now, because I'm in music a lot as well, and he's in my world of the course. Rock and roll a lot. And you see him with Queens of the Stone Age, and obviously he's doing the Hollywood Vampire project with Alice Cooper and Joe Perry, and you sort of see him in that world... seemingly just like he's always been there, like he belongs, and you're just like,
he's the coolest man in the world,
right?
Yeah it's a very close, it's I think he just pips it, though. It's out of him and Serge, and to me he just pips it. Johnny just pips it slightly, but Serge is a very close second.
Yeah,
but he's the coolest, in the respect of the coolest person I've ever met in my life and the coolest people I've ever hung out with. Johnny's lovely.
Did he get to tell you any good Hunter S. Thompson stories?
Yeah, I had a couple, a few.
Because he spent some time living with him, didn't he?
He did.
In the research for Fear and Loathing.
Yeah, he really did, yeah.
You can only imagine.
Yeah, and the firework, do you know about a firework?
No,
you
know, no. Well, that's not my for place another
to,
time.
Not my place to say. It's not a bad thing that happened with the firework. But he was lovely, and he got, you know, as a family, we got to know him. We got to know him really well, and we've kept in touch, and he's been adorable. But the kids love him, do you know what I mean? And he's really, he loves Anna and he loves the kids, and he's just a wonderful man. Yeah,
you've worked with some incredible guys.
I've been very lucky. Oh, yeah, I have.
And we
Tom as well. To have worked with Tom on Taboo, which was a joy. I've always respected him as an actor, do you know what I mean?
Did really. You get any scenes with him in Tinker Tailor or no?
No, we didn't. But I've always respected him as an actor, and he's a very close friend. So to have the opportunity to actually work with him, do you know what I mean, was phenomenal.
And is that coming back this year or is it going to be next year?
I'm not too sure. I think it's being written, I think. I think it's being written now, and then hopefully maybe at some point next year we might shoot it. I think. I'm not too sure.
So you haven't started filming season two yet?
No.
Can we talk at all about the Scorsese picture? Is there anything that you...
Of course you can, yeah.
So for anybody who doesn't know, is the working title The Irishman, or is that going to be the title?
I think that's the working title. I'm still not 100% sure. I think it's going to be called The Irishman, yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so this is the first time ever that he's directed Pacino. It's going to be De Niro, Pacino, Pesci, Harvey Keitel. So all of those Scorsese school of 70s icons and your good self.
Yeah.
Tell me everything you can tell me.
Again, it was another.
Is this something that he's been working on for a while?
Yeah, for a long time. A long time. I think him and De Niro have had it for a long time with the look to do it. I think maybe it's been quite a while actually.
And rough sort of plot.
It's Jimmy Hoffa, who was a massive trades union guy back in the 40s, 50s and 60s, I think. It spans quite, it's a long time period that it spans. he was the Teamsters, the head of the Teamsters union. He worked his way up, do you know what I mean? And it's kind of his story, his rise to where he got to. But it's also the intricacies of the fact that the mafia and the mob were involved with him from an early level, and kind of how it's a major part of American history, do you know what I mean? And when you, because I can't give too much away, but when you look at it, the fact that the Kennedys were involved and presidents were involved, you know what I mean? It's huge. It's absolutely huge. It's kind of like a big magnifying glass to them. But it's predominantly the relationship between these two people, and Frank, who is Jimmy's kind of bodyguard, but also friend, and also gets involved in the Teamsters and works his way up the Teamsters union. But he works for the mob. He's kind of a hitman for the mob. So it's the story of them two as well. Do you know what I mean? How they become friends.
And is that De Niro and Pacino?
That's De Niro and Pacino, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So you can imagine that one.
The history.
Yeah.
Even before you get into the actual story, the history with those two and their journey. And
yeah. Yeah. So, and how that one came about was I was filming with Shane.
Okay.
I've just done a thing with Shane called The Virtues.
Oh, wow. Which, a feature film?
No, it's a TV series. I think it comes out on Channel 4 in March or something.
Oh, great.
Maybe. And that was a hell of an experience. That was amazing to do. Do you know what I mean? To be able to work with Shane again in that capacity.
Anyone else from the This Is England family?
No. No. Helen, who played Vicky's counsellor in the TV series. Helen's in it. She's amazing. So I was shooting that. And then I get a phone call saying, right, I think it was maybe in 10 days you've got to, they've been working out to have a look in my schedule and stuff where I had a little tiny break, but there was no break. So you're going to have to fly to New York to be there on a Saturday. You've got to go meet Robert De Niro. So I was like, oh, what?
With Marty or just
well,
De Niro?
Well, you've got to go meet Robert De Niro because Marty's doing a film called The Irishman, and Marty would really like you to be in it, but you have to meet Bob first, and you know what I mean? He's the exec producer, and he has to sign off on it and stuff like that. And I was like, okay,
that's so the call of a lifetime, right?
Look on my face. You can't see, obviously, the people that are listening to it.
I can assure
but
you he's beaming people.
Yeah. It's a proper smile. And it was just a case of, so then I had to finish work on a Friday and fly out, and then got there Saturday morning and then went and met the two of them. It was amazing. It was a hell of a
I can't even begin to imagine in my head how I'd feel walking into that situation. And you know in your heart you're there because your talent has got you there.
Well, Anna had to tell me that when I was in the car.
Did
no,
she
told me, she Tata, like, not, it wasn't then, it was when I was on set. It was before. I did my scene with Al Pacino, and I'm shitting it. I'm absolutely shitting it. I've been a toilet about 20 times. I'm just going over my stuff, and I'm thinking, oh, and I've had a couple of days. I've done a couple of days filming already, but just me with Marty doing stuff about my character and things. So I've done like 3 or 4 days. So I'm in the swing of it, but now my ass is gone. I'm just like, oh, and I found it and everything. And I was like, I don't know what am I gonna do. She's going, shut up. You're right. You deserve to be there. He's asked for you to be there. You've earned the right to be there. Just get there and just do it now. Just stop messing about. So like, yeah, but what am I going to do? She's like, stop it. I was like, okay. No, you're right. Yeah. No, all right. Yeah. Yeah. He's asked me to. Yeah. He's like, yeah. Fucking right. Yeah. Okay.
Let's have it.
Yeah. Come on. Let's go. And then it was an amazing experience. And them two were unbelievable.
Were they? Yeah. I mean, like, I have to ask, but
so gracious, so lovely. Do you know what I mean? Really, really, really attentive, and just so kind with their time, but also with sharing, with making the scene the truth. Do you know what I mean? I mean, letting me do, my character's a bit of a boy, so to let, you know, for them to just, I mean, and I improvised a hell of a lot, and for Al Pacino, I frightened the shit out of him in one bit, yeah, that I improvised, but I proper frightened him. And
you've got to be pleased with that, right?
I was deaf, oh yeah, because he's doing it, and it, you know, I've done the scene and I've got right into it and I've done this thing that I've planned on doing in my head if it works out right. I've discussed it with Anna when we were going through it. I went, oh, I might do that. She was like, oh, that'd be great. And I was like, yeah, but you don't know. So I didn't tell Marty what I was going to do, and I didn't tell Al Pacino. I didn't tell him. All I told was the props and the cameraman, because he's eating some ice cream and stuff. And I just told him, I said, look, I might just like throw that ice cream, that bolt, might just throw it because he's winding me up a treat. And they were like, okay, we got more. And I was like, okay, geez. Right, now the camera's going to be there. He's like, yeah. I went, okay, I won't hit the camera. I'll try not to hit the camera. And then we did it, and he just put a spoon back in the thing, and I just went, fuck, I just threw this thing right across the room, and then got up and all that, and then he went, ah! And then he went, it was, and then he went, cut, and he went, oh, Marty, he frightened me there, the kid frightened, did you see that? He frightened me, that was a good one. And I was like, oh my God, shit. And we kept doing it, and I got blood on my hands, or I'd cut my hands on this metal thing, and he's going, look at this kid, he's giving blood for the scene, I fucking love this kid. And I was like, whoa, this is ridiculous. This is unbelievable.
I've peaked. Like,
yeah, that was it. It was like playing a Champions League final. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It was like, yes, thank you. And I put three balls in the box and I scored a flying scissor kick in the top corner. It was amazing. And then the same when I had a nice scene with the two of them. It was really lovely. Yeah, it was a hell of an experience for me personally. You know, when you think about, there was them moments as well where, you know, getting on the bus to go to Everyman Youth Theatre, as I was in that Winnebago, do you know what I mean? In that trailer, I was sitting there just kind of reflecting on how far I'd actually come, and then moments when I was going to pack it in because I couldn't get no work, and it was just like, wow, all them little tiny things throughout my life had led up to this moment of being in this position to work with these complete icons, do you know what I mean? And reasons why I wanted to be an actor. But then your little head kind of explodes a bit because me and my dad used to watch all those films. You know, he was the one that got me into cinema, do you know what I mean? Which was amazing. And we used to watch all kinds of films, all Scorsese's films and Kurosawa films. And, you know, I'd said that like Kurosawa.
Akira.
Kurosawa, do you know what I mean? All these great films that I watched with my dad as a kid. And you never, you know, you hope and you have that little dream and that little desire that you can do this as for a living. Do you know what I mean? From that early age and stuff. But you never ever think you're going to be opposite a table with Al Pacino and Robert De Niro. You just can't fathom that. That just doesn't equate in your head. Do you know what I mean? Because we're led all the way over there and they do big Hollywood movies and there's no chance. Do you know, I'm going to Everyman, but I love going to Everyman on the bus. And that was, you know, and I suppose what I'm trying to say there is it any listeners who are actors or musicians or, you know, artists or creatives in any way, it's that kind of don't stop, don't give in, do you know what I mean? Just
persistence and perseverance.
Perseverance, yeah. And there's you know, you will get a lot of knockbacks, but you'll also have them moments of complete fulfillment in every aspect of the word, you know what I mean? That's just like, okay, oh, well, this is what I'm meant to be doing then. Nice one. And when them moments pop up, that, you know, they can be rare, but when you sit in them moments, just enjoy them, because that's what it's all about, personally, do you know what I mean?
Amen, yeah. Going. The process, I think, is as rewarding as the end result.
Of course,
and,
yeah.
You know, things like this, for me, it's nowhere near the level of acting with Pacino and De Niro, but just having to have conversations with people whose work I really admire, the actual conversations themselves and the things that I learn along the way, you know, really make the whole thing worthwhile.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine how pleased and proud, you know, your family must be of you, and it must be nice to be able to share the ride with them.
Of course, yeah, especially as well. My missus, and a little bit now my kids.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Finally attained cool dad status.
I have. I think I am. Yeah, I'm getting there slowly. And it kind of sparked from...
Pirates must have been a turning point, surely.
It was, because it was something the kids could actually watch. Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that was great. But then for me as well, some of our Grace's mates kind of are into the Arctic Monkeys and,
of course,
you know, into Kasabian.
Yeah.
And Grace loves Kasabian, and so does
That's
Alfie.
That's where you got to get it, isn't it, with the music?
But then it was, of course. But then it was like, you know, when our Grace came home and went, "Dad, you're in an Arctic Monkeys video, aren't you?" I went, "Yeah.
Two, actually.
Yeah, I'm in a couple." Yeah. Why? And she went, "Oh, me mate, what's saying in school?" And she's a big Arctic Monkeys fan. I was like, yeah, there you go. She's like, "Oh my God, wow." It's like, "Yeah, do you want to watch it?" No, I didn't say that. But it was, you know, so it's them little things. And to be able to share it with my children, with my wife, and with my family and my friends is amazing, do you know what I mean? And they are extremely proud of what I've achieved and stuff like that. But it's that persistence and that determination. But it's only through them as well. Because if
they're the ones
back
that
have
propped you up when you've been down, yeah.
Especially my mum and my dad and Hannah, completely, do you know what I mean? They're my rock, they're my pillar.
And have you done your first voice acting recently with Hellboy?
Yeah, I did, which was great.
Is that great fun? Very different approach, is it the same?
No, it's mad. It's just you jumping around like an asshole in front of a mic.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was a lot of fun. And I think the best thing for me was not to to kind of go back to that. Remember earlier on when I was saying about Drew, who I saw as a kid, and he had the same accent as me and showed that things were attainable because he was doing it. So that obviously it's possible. Maybe I can do it. You know what I mean? That was a big thing for me. And then I thought, never heard a Scouse monster villain in a cartoon film thing, have you? And I went, no, okay. And then so they asked me to do it, and I get there and all that, and I was like, okay. And they were like, so, you know, we were thinking, and I was like, okay, can I do him Scouse? And they were like, huh? And I was like, me, how I talk, but not my voice. And they were like, what, from Liverpool? I was like, yeah, from Liverpool. Johnny, what? Sean, what you thinking about this thing? And they were like, yeah, fuck it, go ahead. Yeah, I'm having a go. And I was like, yeah, okay. And I'd already thought if I was going to do it, I was going to do my Uncle Eddie's voice. Because my Uncle Eddie's got that kind of older, or that kind of talks a bit more like that. So I already had that planned in my head. And then when they put the effect on it, He's just so much. I just had so much fun. Also, dude, they got me to improvise quite a lot. So I'm just swearing all the time. Do you know what I mean? He's just a very angry hog, basically, who's fucking pissed off with everything. Do you know what I mean? So it was great fun for me. Yeah, it was really good fun. Yeah.
Is that going to be out this year? And is the Scorsese film out this year as well?
I think the Scorsese film's out at the end of the year. I think. I'm not 100%, but I think so. I think Shane's is definitely out this year. That series we did called The Virtues.
And that's Channel 4?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was very... Yeah, that's a really heavy piece. That's a heavy piece.
I'd expect so with Mr. Meadows.
Yeah, it's very heavy, that one. Yeah, it was an honour to do.
The heaviest thing you filmed?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'd say so, definitely. Personally, yeah. There's a bit in there where we were shooting something else and we were supposed to go to the pub to shoot a scene in the pub, and again all this little bit was improvised, and I think we were supposed to be there at 5 o'clock. We didn't get there till 8 o'clock, and the people in the pub, it was their local pub in Sheffield, it was their pub kind of near the city centre, and so they'd all had free booze. So by the time we got there at 8:30, they were all plastered. And I mean, shit-faced. Like, no messing about. They were shit-faced. And I went, what are we going to do? And Shane went, that'll be great. So that was it. So we shot in that mayhem. Do you know what I mean? We shot that little bit in that mayhem, which really was. It was interesting.
I think what I've deducted from a large part of our conversation is with Shane, everything you see is kind of what you get a lot of the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if people bear that in mind when going into this.
Yeah. And Shane, as a man, he's wonderful. Do you know what I mean? He's a very, very, he's a dear friend, and he's a wonderful man. But as a director, if he said to me, right, you need to jump off that cliff, I'd go, okay. I wouldn't ask any questions about where the airbag was or anything like that. None of that would enter my head. I'd just go, okay, that cliff. Yeah, okay. Am I running or am I walking or am I walking backwards or what do you want me? Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of, you have that more. I personally, and I know a lot of the other actors that work with him, you have that much trust in him.
Complete trust
in his, in what he's doing. Complete trust. Yeah.
And he's hilarious, isn't he?
And he's brilliant. Yeah, he's so funny. Yeah. You should get Shane on here.
I'd love to.
Yeah.
Do you reckon you'd be able to hook me up?
Yeah, you never know. I'll have a word. Let me have a word, kid. Let me have a word, boy.
Stephen, what's your favourite Shane story before we go? A light-hearted, fun one.
I don't know. There's so many. Yeah, some non
not suitable for broadcast.
Not suitable for those for certain ears, shall we say? Just there's lots. There was lots.
Thanks so much for your time, mate. It's been a delight, and thanks for all your great work as well.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you. Long may it continue.
Amen to that.
Cheers.
Cheers, Steve.
Thanks a lot.
I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.